The job of the blender is to combine these elements in such a way as to produce an overall flavour.
A wider repertoire of different beverages than ever before.
I think one of the most interesting breweries, and certainly one of the most interesting origin stories for a brewery in Australia.
Single malts, blends, grain whiskies, bourbons and more.
If you want mezcal to be sold around the world, then unfortunately you're going to have to make a compromise.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson. And this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. World Martini Day is celebrated every year on the third Saturday in June. That's today, Saturday, June 18, if you're listening to this episode in real time. And with us to talk martinis is Archie Rose master distiller, Dave Withers, who you previously met in Season 3 of Drinks Adventures. This particular episode was produced with the support of Archie Rose, or more specifically, Archie Rose Bone Dry Gin. Bone Dry was the first gin produced by Archie Rose using the copper vacuum stills at its new Banks Meadow production site, opened in 2021. And coming up today, Dave will explain why it's the perfect gin for a martini, which he says is an important cocktail for the team at Archie Rose.
The martini's got a cult status for the team, actually. So there are a few wheelers and dealers in the martini trade on the team. So usually if Friday drinks, there's more than a few that come out. I think what we really enjoy the most about the martini is it's a contract between the bartender and the customer, which is, you know, it's very easy for someone to have a look at a drinks menu, select something, go up to the bartender and, you know, order it. But if you ask for a martini, then it starts a conversation. You know, do you like that with a twist? Do you like it dirty? How dirty do you like it? You know, do you like a wet? Are we talking dry? You know, that whole conversation piece kind of transcends, I suppose, the normal transactional nature of kind of ordering a drink. And it actually, you know, inspires some kind of, you know, great interaction and can heighten the experience of actually having the drink and being at the venue. So for us in the team, we really love it. Yeah.
Have you had a signature martini at Archie Rose that's sort of stayed the same since you launched, or what martinis have you sort of had on the menu there?
Yeah, we're pretty flexible. We've done all kinds of things from, it just depends what's sort of coming out. So years ago, we've had a bush gin and that we served pretty dirty, filthy, some might say. And, you know, that really kind of went well. It kind of gave this really kind of savory kind of edge. Our signature dry gin does really well, just sort of served up fairly dry with a twist. But we really enjoy getting behind the limited releases and what they look like on the menu. It gives the bartenders something more to kind of vibe off. You know, they can take it in a slightly different direction. They can kind of, you know, do something a little bit more exciting.
Now, I believe everyone over there is excited about the Bone Dry Gin as a martini gin.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's not too much wrong with basically a long glass of cold gin. So we enjoy them pretty dry around here. The thing is with the Bone Dry is there's so many botanical oils in the actual spirit itself. When you kind of, when you break them down, when you stir them down with a little bit of ice, maybe just a touch of vermouth, it goes cloudy, it goes pearlescent. So that's how much kind of flavor there is. I want to say flavor you can see, but I think pizza shapes legal team might come after me after if I say that. But yeah, it's kind of got this pearlescent, milky kind of character about it. And, you know, it's really, really nice. I mean, I think that there's been a trend in trade towards martinis. I think people are kind of growing into them and sort of like really the maturity of the gin market has kind of meant that people are going up to bartenders and ordering these drinks. I think it started at the sort of wet end of the scale where people are sort of more, you know, about that combination of the gin and the vermouth as well as the garnish. So that kind of, you know, that combination is adding an interesting little complexity. I think most of the people in the team around here, we enjoy a pretty dry, so we like a kind of vermouth, takes a bit of a bat seat. Kind of likes the gin do a lot more of the talking. I mean, we're a distilling company, not a vermouth company, so that's, I suppose, that tracks. Yeah, I think it's really great to see people have the confidence to be ordering what is a pretty straight up spirity drink. It's a confident drink to order and it's one that has a lot of personality and character, and it's, you know, a great way to start the evening.
I know that Will and Harriet and a few other people are really big on the Bone Dry Gin and very excited about that particular product. You know, tell us about how that was made and, you know, the significance of the new production site in making that gin possible.
Yeah, we kind of had a pretty unique setup here at our new distillery. And this was actually the first gin that we produced at the new site. So to kind of walk you through it, we've always at Archie Rose distilled each of the botanicals separately. And the kind of the core belief behind that is that what works for one botanical is not necessarily going to work for the another botanical. So for example, if we take juniper, you know, we're really wanting to accentuate that kind of dry, herbaceous, piney sort of character. And that's great. And so we can set up all of the distillation parameters, the way of distilling it to really maximize that kind of flavor in juniper. But that's going to be a very different set of distillation conditions to what we would see if we want to, for example, distill citrus. So what works best for citrus is going to be very different. So in distilling them all separate, we can get the very most of the, out of the ingredient. And for me, it's about respect. If it's taken a whole year for the farmer to grow that, or if it's been hand foraged or whatever the origin of that ingredient is, the least we can do when we bring that ingredient into the distillery is to give it the respect to get the most out of it and get the best flavor. So what we really wanted to do for Bone Dry was take, you know, the core kind of ingredient in gin, you know, juniper. And we really wanted to show the breadth and depth of flavor that you can get from that ingredient. So what we did was we distilled that juniper three different ways. So one was just using our column setup. One was using the botanical basket and the column. And the third option was using a vacuum. Now, vacuum is a bit of an unusual one. We've got a pretty unusual setup in terms of how we distill things. So it's a kind of a bit of a nerdy point. It's a bit of a nerdy technical kind of area. But basically what happens is if you normally distill things, you add heat to it and it becomes a vapor. You know, your gin, when you're distilling gin, it might boil at maybe 90 degrees. By applying a vacuum, and it's a pretty heavy vacuum, it's like 3/4 of the perfect vacuum space, so it's pretty heavy. That basically brings the boiling point down to about 45 degrees from 90 degrees. So what that does, you know, if you think about when you're cooking at home, some ingredients really love the heat, some don't. So, for example, if you're making a bolognese, you'd use onion at the beginning, it loves that. But you would never put your basil right at the beginning because it's just going to get black and kind of burnt. So using the different heat applications allows us to extract different kind of flavors. So in this case with the juniper, the vacuum distilled kind of expression is much more floral. It's kind of got this apple blossom, lime blossom kind of, you know, it's very vibrant, ethereal, kind of fresh character. And we distill it using the same kind of setup, but without the vacuum. So still the column, but without the vacuum. We're going to get that really hardcore, resinous, sticky kind of piney character. And when we did the botanical basket with the column, what we found was a little bit more of an earthy kind of character, so more woody. It's more like that sort of branchy sort of character you might have from the actual pininess. So it's still got that herbaceousness, but it's just a little bit more sort of woody, I suppose. And so what we wanted to do was really bring those three ingredients together in the right ratio and make a gin that had an element of all three of those, that had that ethereal lightness, that had that strong pininess, and also had an undertone of that woodiness. And yeah, that was the basic concept behind the Bone Dry.
So, yeah, tell me how you do use it in martinis over there. You mentioned that you like them pretty dry, but what is the vermouth that you're working with there?
Yeah, I mean, we use two. We really like Maid and I vermouth. You know, they're great guys. You know, they make a phenomenal product. It's local to Australia as well, and it gives a nice little supporting character. If we were looking for something that was a little bit more pared back again, we would go for something like Dolin. You know, it's pretty readily available, but also doesn't have a necessarily like the grape forwardy character you might get with Nulli Prat or something like that. It's a little bit more elegant and sort of dialed back. Yeah.
So you do a lot of tastings at the distillery or at the bar there, just kind of working out how your spirits will play with other ingredients?
It's a tough life, James, but yeah, we do. So when we're doing recipe development on anything, so it'll be basically a lab scale, we'll basically put together like a 200 mil sample and a select group of us will kind of start mucking around with a few ingredients. We always look at it in gin and tonic, martinis, another one, and a Negroni. So those three classic sort of serves are what most people drink them as. And yeah, we always want to make sure that it works in a range of tonics, because not everyone always has access to, you know, fancy tonics. So it should work in Schweppes just as well as it should work in Fever Tree or Fentimans or any other great, you know, Strange Love, any other great tonic. And it, in a martini, it should also work in a range of different serves. You know, we'll look at it basically with a twist, we'll look at it dirty, we'll play around with a few of the ratios and a couple of different vermouths at the same time.
So you sort of start by constructing your recipe for what you think is going to be a great gin, and then the next kind of phase is potential tweaks just to ensure that it performs optimally in those drinks that you mentioned.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, and we do take that pretty seriously. We've in the past in bone dry gin development, we found that when we put it in a martini, you know, it had too much of a bold citrus character on the palate. And so we ended up taking that information back to the blending room and actually adjusting the profile and then kind of having a look at it again and sort of seeing whether it sort of aligns. Because, you know, I mean, martini is the closest you're going to get to drinking a straight glass of gin, really, but very few people are drinking it straight. So it's really all about what that end user is actually going to drink it as, what that serve is, and making sure that we're enhancing that experience as much as possible.
Not many people would have the opportunity like you have to sit down and taste a whole bunch of different vermouths. What are some of the other contrasts that you see when you taste Australian examples versus some of the old world styles? Is it quite within the category of white vermouth? Is it quite a broad array of different styles?
The Australian vermouths tend to have a bit more of a botanical character, I think, than some of the European examples. And that's great. I mean, we've got such a wealth of phenomenal and interesting characterful botanicals that can be used in that. I use Maid and I again as an example because I think they make a really top-notch product. And Gilles there is a fantastic winemaker who's been making really, really lovely vermouths for quite some years now. And yeah, I mean, I think that goes toe-to-toe with just about the best in the world. As I say, I think that some vermouths like Nulli Prat are a bit more grape-forward, so there's a bit more sort of that wine character and maybe a little bit more subtle on the botanical. Dolin, again, even more dialed back to sort of like a little bit more of a subtle profile on both counts. But yeah, I think that we should celebrate the bounty that we have here. We make great, amazing wine in this country. We grow fantastic botanicals. And so there's no reason why there shouldn't be more players working in that space.
From your experience in trialing gins in mixed drinks, you know, what do you think are the sort of the most common ways that you can go wrong as a distiller when it comes to making a spirit that's going to mix well? You know, you mentioned citrus, but is that a particular botanical that can cause you grief, or what are the other things that you can do that kind of create pointy edges that don't meld particularly well with the drink?
Yeah, I think it's all about balance. And I think that sometimes when we're putting a blend together, if we don't have that balance right, then you sort of, you have a taste and it's not like a compelling narrative. It doesn't move seamlessly from this note into the next. Something sticks out and is jarring. And that to us is, you know, something we take back to the blending room and make sure we're getting right. We also want to make sure that those flavors are enjoyable flavors. So you might have something balanced, but maybe it's overly earthy or, you know, it's overly woody or something like that. So what's the occasion? When are people drinking this? And, you know, are people really going to want that kind of flavor in that sort of moment? So it's the occasion that you're enjoying it as well. For us, a martini is quite often kind of pre-dinner. It's something to kind of spark things off and start the evening right. And so for us, it's about that freshness, the vibrancy, and also the personality, you know. If you're starting out the meal with a nice kind of positive experience, then that's going to set you in a good spot for the rest of the day or the rest of the evening.
Sure. Now, you know, martini can be vodka or gin. At Archie Rose, if you order a martini, is there going to be any question around what the lead spirit is going to be?
Hopefully that's the first question that they ask. Yeah, I mean, vodka martinis are pretty popular. I won't weigh into that debate too heavily. I think that's definitely up to the consumer. I always prefer gin myself, but nothing wrong with a vodka martini. I had one down in Tassie very recently with the Hartshorn vodka that was really delicious, you know, that and has this lovely sort of creamy sort of character to it as well. So yeah, there's definitely some characterful vodkas that can be used to make a really, really top-notch martini.
It seems like there's a lot of energy behind Bone Dry now that you guys are at the new facility, but obviously the Signature, as the name would suggest, has always kind of been the flagship. What does it mean for the Signature Dry Gin?
So it was a really great opportunity moving to the new plant to have a look at the recipe that we had for Signature Dry Gin. The way that I explain it to other people, the process we went through was, does this botanical give us joy? And so it was like the Marie Kondo of botanical distillations, I guess. So we basically just wanted to make sure that if it was in the gin, that it was really adding something unique and powerful to the mix. So we ended up actually refining the recipe mix, and we ended up basically focusing in on a number of botanicals. We removed a number. And what we found was with the added complexity we were getting from the new setup and the new distillates, that we were able to maintain and improve the quality. And so that's what we did, yeah. So when we launched a Signature Dry Gin from this side, it came with new packaging, and we kind of are talking about it as our reimagined kind of version of that. So you'll find with our reimagined Signature Dry, it's much more sort of piney, it's much more juniper forward. It tends to support some of the Dorigo pepper leaf character, which we've always used a little bit more. And so there's that peppery, piney sort of character that's really pretty strong. And it should finish with a nice sort of clean, crisp and dry character. So to us, it is the modern Australian twist on the classic. That's what we've always said about it. And for us, it was about filling out those boots and really making good on that promise. So I always encourage people, if you've tried the Signature Dry Gin in the past, like years ago, and it wasn't for you, give it another go, because we think that this is looking pretty classy now.
Is that well suited to martini as well? Or is Bone Dry definitely the standout there?
Yeah, look, it does stand up pretty well in a martini. I would say maybe a little bit wetter with a twist, works really well. I mean, I think Bone Dry, it does what it says on the package, right? It's pretty dry, so it's definitely for the gin boffin. If you're looking for more of an everyday drink, you know, definitely the Signature Dry does a good job.
Is there anything that you want to get off your chest in terms of, like, you know, current trends in gin and the market generally? You know, things that you're enjoying or not enjoying about what's going on in gin at the moment?
Yeah. Look, I think in terms of making top quality gin, it's getting harder because there's so much competition around really top-notch juniper. We're really fortunate having some great long relationships with people, and so we've been able to get some really top quality juniper. But yeah, I think it's getting harder to really make that juniper an asset in a gin, because there's just so many people out there making gin, which is great. I mean, that's an awesome thing for the industry and the consumer as well. But yeah, we certainly look at what that juniper looks like, both in the context of traditional ingredients. So for example, it's not often explored or sort of discussed, but coriander seed, which is a traditional kind of ingredient, can really support juniper. In fact, most traditional distillers actually use more coriander seed than they would juniper in their recipes. And so that sort of pine and lime, that sort of, you know, herbaceous character really sharpens up with a good use of coriander. And we've been really fortunate to get hold of some single estate coriander that's grown in South Australia. It has this really lovely floral character about it. We really enjoy it. And it's actually much cheaper than trying to import it or sort of get it from overseas. So we've been really fortunate in that way. I think there's a general trend towards more juniper-led gins. I think for a while there was a lot of gins that were out there in the market which were kind of paired back on the juniper and was sort of showcasing other flavors. And I think that was really great. It brought a lot of consumers into the category. And I think as those consumers have started to mature and explore gin in more depth, they're starting to get hooked on what that juniper and pine character looks like. And I think that's where something like the Bone Dry Gin is kind of, you know, we're kind of trying to appeal to that consumer. We're trying to put something out there that's just way off the map in terms of dryness.
We don't hear people talk about the quality of juniper and the sourcing of juniper all that much in this country. And I wonder whether it's just because it comes from overseas. So people make a bit more noise around the other ingredients that they are sourcing locally.
Yeah, I mean, we take sourcing of all of our ingredients pretty seriously. But the thing about juniper is it is hand foraged. So there's some inherent variability from that. And so There's also supply chain issues as well. So how it's dried down, how it's transported, and then just batch-to-batch variation. We go about things, we take it pretty seriously. So we'll ask for advanced samples, we'll distill it, we'll make sure that the profile is lining up to what we want to see it as, and we'll do all of that on a lab scale. So when we're purchasing that juniper, we're knowing that it is going to be within a ballpark to what we would typically see for a juniper distillate. But then when we bring it into the distillery, we will track by batch. So when batch A is done, we might distill it a certain way with certain conditions. And then as batch B comes in, we're really monitoring that to see how is it reacting to our system and what levers do we need to pull to bring that flavor profile back in alignment. If we can make it even better, great. It's not all about consistency. It's also about quality for us. But that sourcing is, yeah, I think it's an undersold part of the gin making process. I think it goes for all ingredients. For us, we always try and use fresh ingredients where we can. So anything that's local to Australia, we always try and use fresh. We feel quite strongly about the fact that the fresh ingredients have more soul, more character, more complexity. So for example, lemon myrtle. We don't use dried lemon myrtle or lemon myrtle oils. We will source fresh lemon myrtle and we will distill it as soon as it lands in the distillery. And for that, we get this lovely, like herbaceous, waxy, almost sort of like jelly bean kind of character coming out of it that you just don't see in the dried ingredient.
Archie Rose, master distiller Dave Withers, speaking there. And you can buy bone dry gin direct from the company at archierose.com.au or retailers like Dan Murphy's, First Choice, and good independent bottle shops too. The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at by James Atkinson, like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.